corporate candy floss news and no political spin. This is Truth Radio by Internet. Thanks to our sponsor, Neemwell.com, because here, the expression is still free. As Israeli forces pound southern Lebanon into dust, and with a NATO force waiting in the wings, it's time to find out what's going on. Time to explore the secrets of the Lebanon Gambit on The Next Level on breakfornews.com.
Would you do me a favor and push me on to the next level?
It's Saturday, the 29th of July at 8 p.m. Eastern, and this is Fintan Dunn reporting. Thank you for joining us for this special bulletin. People are wondering, is this the beginning of a meltdown in the Middle East? Is it the beginning of World War III, etc., etc.? Others are wondering, perhaps it's just a diversion from the difficulties which the US is facing in Iraq right now. Well, let's see. What I'm going to step you through right now is an illustration of this extraordinary ruthlessness at work at the political level, and that will tell us where we're headed with all this. The roots of what's going on now in Lebanon go back quite some time, but in terms of this analysis, they go back at least until Valentine's Day 2005. It was on that day that a former prime minister of the Lebanon, Rafiq Hariri, and 11 others were killed in a massive car bomb explosion, which was blamed at the time on Syria. Hariri had been more than just an economic powerhouse in Lebanon. He was a force in politics there who could have knit together various factions to rebuild Lebanon. And that rebuilding is something that Hariri was engaged in, which made him an impediment to progress. Progress, that is, for the G8 agenda in the region. And we'll be getting to the details of that G8 agenda. But at the time, the finger of suspicion was pointed by APUPI, and the Western media was pointed at Syria, which was a patent nonsense. It was totally not in Syria's interests to have Hariri die, which is why even British newspapers such as the Daily Telegraph were pointing out that Israel had the most to gain. The Parisian newspaper L'Humanité said that Israel could be behind the murder because it wanted to prevent the peace process which Syria had been repeatedly calling for. And it's absolutely the case that Syria had little to gain, Israel everything to gain from the murder of Hariri. But hold on a second before we go any further, because Israel is an easy culprit in these matters. Is it just their bright idea, or is there some other guiding hand behind the scenes? And I think you'll agree when we've done this analysis that there is another hand behind the scenes. Anyhow, that was Hariri, and that was the 14th of February 2005. One of the vital actors in the region had just been taken out, clearing the way for what's currently going on in Lebanon. But he wasn't the only one to be taken out. As the year progressed, Syria, under increasing pressure from Western forces and realizing that it was to their advantage, pulled their troops out of Lebanon. And now the way really was clear, but nothing was to happen yet. The timing wasn't right. But by November 2005, the timing was right. And it was at that point that Yasser Arafat also departed the scene, amid claims that he had been poisoned. His own personal physician, Professor Ashraf El-Kurdi, there's a high probability, he said, that it was poisoning, and I don't understand why there was no autopsy. Now, El-Kurdi said that Arafat had lost almost half of his body weight. He did not respond to either food or medicine. He had a persistent, unaccounted for stomach pains, and all treatments did not have any impact. That's why he was transferred to Paris, to no avail. Yasser Arafat died, and those claims of poisoning, I put it to you now, are substantive, and he was poisoned. Once again, the finger of suspicion was pointed at Israel, and indeed, who better placed to carry it out than Israel with their intelligence penetration? In any event, another person who could have played a key role in any upcoming crisis had been removed from the scene. Like Hariri in Lebanon, Yasser Arafat was now gone. Meanwhile, the hysterical campaign to pin the blame for the murder of Hariri on Syria was running into trouble as a key witness who was giving evidence to a UN commission investigating the assassination withdrew his statement that there were links to senior Syrian officials and to the younger brother of President Bashar al-Assad of Syria. But he didn't just withdraw his statement. He said that Lebanese officials had tortured him into presenting false testimony. He said he was told he would be given $1.3 million if he lied about senior Syrian officials. And so with the contrived campaign against Syria in danger of imploding as this information about the manipulation of a key witness emerged, somebody else died, not a major figure. As I wrote in an article on the 14th of December 2005, why the CIA is lying about Syria, I wrote, just days ago, Gibran Tuni, editor of the An-Nahar newspaper and an MP, was murdered in Lebanon by a car bomb along with two others as he drove through an industrial suburb. He played a prominent role in the mass demonstrations against Syria following the killing of Hariri and was an outspoken critic of Syria. Would they kill one of their own main anti-Syrian allies simply to whip up a frenzy and divert away attention from the holes becoming apparent in the UN report? Well, yes, I wrote. I mean, which part of totally ruthless don't you get? And so another player exited the scene. Three political assassinations down, folks, and one to go. And then just 4 days after I wrote that article, Ariel Sharon suffered what was reported at the time as a minor stroke on the 18th of December 2005. Now, if Ariel Sharon made one miscalculation in the course of his political career, the most costly miscalculation he ever made was to get involved in the plan to set up a new Kadima party, and he was in the process of setting that party up. He had, I'm sure, been manipulated into thinking it was to his advantage to set Kadima up. But the danger was this. Kadima was a brand new political party, just being put together. And Sharon was the glue putting it together, the linchpin. With Sharon out of the way, the Kadima party, brand new party, would need a brand new leader. And then something astonishing happened. As I say, on the 18th of December, it was announced that Ariel Sharon had had a mild stroke. And on the 20th of December 2005, we saw a photo of Ariel Sharon leaving hospital. I reported on this, you can Google it, has Ariel Sharon been dead since December 2005? Because what we saw on the 20th of December was this photo of Sharon emerging from the Hadassah hospital where he had been for this mild stroke, supposedly emerging. And I'll link to this report in the forum post that goes with this audio. Just click on the photo beside the audio if you're clicking from the home page. The only problem was that the Ariel Sharon who emerged from the hospital was around about, I'd say, at least 6 or 7 inches too tall. See, Ariel Sharon is 5'7", and the positioning of the figure of Sharon in this photo would make Sharon taller than the hospital director who was photographed in front of the same sign. The hospital director is a tall, thin man. Sharon is a small, squat man. And unfortunately, the photo fakers of Sharon's hospital exit photo placed Sharon in position in the photo much too tall. It's a laughable fake. The implications of that. Ariel Sharon did die on the 18th of December. And something else was part of the plan. How that would be played was part of the plan too. While Sharon was incapacitated, the Deputy Prime Minister, Ehud Olmert, could take over, would take over, had to take over. And so the transition period during which Ariel Sharon was almost dead, or maybe dead, or on the way to being dead, gave the perfect introduction for Olmert. Olmert was their picked man. Olmert was the man they wanted to manoeuvre into position. Extraordinarily, Ariel Sharon for all his usefulness to the US Imperial Forces and the G8 forces, for all his usefulness, was just disposed of at the appropriate time. What I'm saying to you is that this is no accident. The death murder by bombing of Hariri in February 2005, the poisoning of Arafat in November 2005, and the triggering of a stroke by whatever means in Ariel Sharon in December 2005 took out three key actors. Why were they taken out? The G8 and the forces they represent, the forces they head up, were ready to make their move. The only thing is, well, there's no real valid excuse for the moving forces into the area. Well, they could move, for example, if there were some kind of a humanitarian crisis, but what do you do if you need a humanitarian crisis and you don't have a humanitarian crisis? Well, you just create one, don't you? And that's what Olmert is now doing. Olmert is carrying out the bidding of the G8, cynically and ruthlessly slaughtering civilians en masse, deliberately. These are not collateral damage. The objective of the Lebanon invasion by Israel is not to strike a blow at Hezbollah. You can't prevent Hezbollah from striking back. They're dug in, they've tunnels, they've thousands of missiles. It's lunacy to try and take them on militarily in that fashion. And that's why we've seen Israel scale back military forces, because that was obvious. And instead they're concentrating on air power. Whom does air power target? It targets civilians. That's the reason. The reason is to inflict the civilian casualties. I told you, ruthless. That's what's going on. And then those pictures are flashed around the world and we have the calls going out for something to be done. And you know what that something is. It's the entry of NATO forces into the Middle East. Wow. Well, what a prize. Because whatever about US public opinion, which has already been well primed with the 9/11 event in terms of accepting the entry of US forces into the Middle East, European public opinion would be, one would expect, they would expect, anyone would expect, that they would be much more resistant to the idea of French, German, Italian soldiers moving in to an area like the Middle East. For what reason? Without a humanitarian crisis to give a raison d'etre for the movement of NATO forces into the area, there would be political opposition to such a move. Now, the G8 leaders are all behind it. They make appropriate noises in public. They play games in public. The whole thing is a cynical game in which the civilian casualties are the enabling mechanism. Clearly, there are advantages to the G8 to move NATO troops into the region. But there are other advantages that mightn't be apparent on the surface, and I'll be covering those and how all of this fits in to the upcoming elections in the United States. This is Sky with a voice of syrup and a song that's wondering what's wrong with me. You're on The Next Level on breakfornews.com, and we'll be right back.
Try not to think about the distance of the setting sun. Try not to think about the rain. Try not to think about the saints and sinners who has more fun. Try not to think about the rain. Try not to think about the evil empires and stupid fools. Try not to think about the rain. Try not to think about the regulations and the rules. Try not to think about the rain. Try not to think about the rain. About the planets when they line up wrong. I try not to think about the rain. I try not to think about the future or the future, so on and so on. I try not to think about the rain.
And you're very welcome back. You're on the next level on breakfornews.com. And as we saw just before the music there, that death of Sharon, the stage-managed exit of Sharon, moves things out of these assassinations in the Middle East being an Israeli plot, doesn't it? Because we had Arafat and Hariri and Sharon exit. And that wasn't an Israeli plot. That was a plot by the people who are now about to move their forces into the area. Duh! That was a plot by the people who engineered the Syrians out of Lebanon so they could move their own forces in, and engineered key local players in so they could completely take hold of the political process in the Middle East, right in the heart of it. Now that they're there, or nearly there, it's only a matter of time before those forces move in, believe me. Unless the world can stomach the continued mass slaughter of the people of Lebanon, which they probably can't, and the people of Lebanon can't, we will see NATO, primarily NATO forces, under a UN mandate, move into the area. What's their objective now they're there? World War III, an attack on Syria, and then on Iran? Well, regular listeners and regular readers of Break for News know the Iranian thing is a complete red herring. We, the West, the people in the G8, the intelligence services of the West, we control the leadership in Iran. That's why we gave them stewardship of the southern half of Iraq, because Iran now runs that on G8's behalf. There's a really good key reason why they're moving NATO troops into the area. Yes, the action's taking place right now in Lebanon, but these people plan ahead. What they're doing is engineering NATO forces in without the kind of political opposition to such a move, they hope, that one would expect from Europe. And no doubt what will happen is the Israelis will stop the aerial bombardments, the NATO forces will move in, and there will be a degree of return to normality. There will be calls for a proper democratic process in Lebanon. So we will have what they were talking about back at the time of the murder of Hariri, the Cedar Revolution, like the Orange Revolution in the Ukraine, another stage-managed political revolution which results in a democracy which is entirely in the hands of G8 interests. So we'll see that happen. And then what will be said as that's happening is what a tremendous success it has been to get NATO forces into Lebanon in order to keep the peace, something that the United Nations weren't able to do. The plan is that by celebrating the achievements of NATO forces in the Lebanon, they hope that by the time we get into 2007, late 2007, they will have beaten the Iraqi resistance, they hope, and they will be in the process of moving in NATO peacekeepers into Iraq. Because the people in the United States are not going to take the continuing casualties forever. The US forces are in there to do the dirty work, to suffer the major casualties, and to attempt to break the Iraqi resistance. And the plan always has been to move NATO forces into Iraq to take their place. And that is being primed by the movement of NATO forces into Lebanon. That's how these people plan. They're planning for a diminishment in support for the waging of a war in Iraq in the United States. And they are engineering NATO into picking up the slack as US forces are decreased, and we'll see an internationalization, they hope, of forces in Iraq. That is what's going on in terms of the implications for Iraq. They're not dumb, they're the reverse. They're very clever and they're totally ruthless. They are already preparing for the backlash, which is coming in the United States. And that's why I've been saying for well over a year that we are going to be moved back to a democratic administration, that that's what's going to happen. And what will happen is that the rhetoric at that time will be that now a democratic administration has to sort out this chaos in the Middle East, this crisis in the entire Middle East following the stupid, over-the-top, neocon-led actions of the Bush administration, which have totally screwed things up, although there are some promising signs, such as the emergence of democracy in Iraq and the emergence of a democratic process in the Lebanon, and so a democratic administration using NATO troops now as their enforcement arm will begin to, well, continue the same process of occupation and democratic reconstruction in Western interests, but they'll be able to do it under a different banner and without the kind of commitment of US forces which has been necessary during the Bush period. We will also, of course, have the verdict against Saddam Hussein to reinforce the reasons why the US went in to Iraq in the first place, supposedly, or the supposed Saddam, I should say, as well. So there's the pitch, which they hope will prevent a meltdown of the Republican vote, because they don't want that. But nevertheless, they do need to let the Democrats out of the box a bit. And in the Middle East, what's the next goal? Well, the goal is, of course, to continue to pressure Syria and put pressure on the Syrians to engineer regime change there. They don't fancy going up against the Syrian army, though, believe me. No, it's more of a regime change plan with Syria. Rhetoric in relation to Iran will continue, but what they're effectively doing is creating a zone where from Afghanistan to the River Jordan they have a swathe of territory now which is under G8 control, either directly militarily or through the use of the proxies, the Israelis and the Iranians. And I think that their strategic objectives in the short term, anyhow, the next couple of years, are served by what they're at right now. No, the focus is going to move to the rest of CENTCOM, the southeastern end of CENTCOM. What's CENTCOM? It's the US Central Command Zone, which covers the broader Middle East and North Africa. And I'm back to that 10th of June 2004 article on the dawn of the G8 New World Order, where they announced their partnership deal for the broader Middle East and North Africa. In other words, a takeover of the region. And the moves are going to be into Africa with a 50,000 strong global peacekeeping force. Peacekeeping. Now, in order to have a peacekeeping force, well, you need a war. And so they're in the business of fostering war there as well, just as they're in the business of creating humanitarian disasters in Lebanon to get their forces in. So, in all, they will have three armies at their disposal. A 50,000 strong, acceptable UN peacekeeping force, a NATO force, which will be a post-American peacekeeping force for the European zone, and of course the US Army. And I've no doubt that they will continue to use those three forces to build their empire on the backs of civilian casualties, largely civilian casualties. And the only thing that's going to stop them is a broader public awareness of what's really going on. Whereas what you're getting now, for example, from the left-wing media in the United States, in the United Kingdom in particular, is you're getting a demonization of the Israelis, just as you have, say, a demonization of George Bush, in order to direct your feelings towards convenient hate figures and prevent you from seeing the participation of the overall corporate G8 military-industrial pharmaceutical complex in what's going on. The other thing that's going to stop them is what's stopping them right now, and that is the continuing and strong Iraqi resistance, which is still maintaining a devastating level of attacks on US forces and is the reason why they're still stuck with 135,000 troops in Iraq and will be stuck with that kind of number for the foreseeable future. And so those are the secrets of the Lebanon Gambit, and you're getting them here on breakfornews.com. Needless to say, you are getting theatrics from the CIA fakes and from much of the controlled left-wing media. And so I would like to make a special appeal to you, to some of you, not all. Thank you first to those who have supported the work that we're doing on breakfornews.com. And it would be great if you could continue to support us. But I would particularly like to address those who visit the site on a regular basis, listen to the audios on a regular basis. If everybody who listens and reads what's on breakfornews.com were to contribute a small amount, then that would be great, and that would take a lot of the pressure off here. You can go to the homepage and click on Support Us. It's a link at the top of the homepage, and you can use a credit card to contribute at whatever level you like, or you can also use PayPal at that link that's on the homepage. Support Us. Believe me, we do need your support. The website is not plastered with donate, 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 and the audios are not full of donate, donate, support, support. So when we do make an appeal for your support, it's because we need it. Thank you very much. Okay, that's it for this edition, this special report on the secrets of the Lebanon Gambit. I'll be back soon with more, and I hope that you can join me for that. But in the meantime, for breakfornews.com, this has been Fintan Dunn reporting.
Will you always keep me warm? Hold me safe and away from harm. Keep day from night, and as the day fades, burn a candle bright for me. Will you always keep me warm? Hold me safe and away from harm. Keep day from night, and as the day fades, burn a candle bright for me. Walking into the sun. Walking into the sun. Walking into the sun. Walking into the sun.